Hey, beginner riders, this is Martina, and I have put together this audio recording for you guys. For those of you who, like me, sometimes want to listen to an audio version as opposed to having to read an ebook, I especially like having audio versions if I want to listen to something in the car. For you guys, maybe you'd want to listen to this while you're driving to the barn to your lessons. So without further ado, let's get started. Introduction. Hey, beginner rider, I'm so happy that you're here. In this ebook, I'm going to share some of my favorite riding tips and how they can help you improve your riding quickly, painlessly, and accelerate your progress in group or individual lessons. When I started riding, I would make a lot of mistakes. A lot of those mistakes were what I consider common beginner rider mistakes. There are things beginners instinctively try to do in order to fix common problems that come up in the saddle, but that usually don't work very well. I was mostly doing group lessons or camps, and I was pretty shy, so I didn't like to ask a lot of questions. Also, there just wasn't much of an opportunity in just the 1 hour time slot that I had to ride. Furthermore, I couldn't really afford much more than one lesson a week or so, so I found it really hard to improve as some of the other riders who had more opportunities to ride. Some of these other riders even had their own horse, something I could only dream of at the time. Over time, I developed fixes for myself for these common mistakes with the help of coaches, doing a ton of research, and most importantly, the experience of riding a ton of different horses over the years. Who is the Beginner Rider's Bible for? The Beginner Rider's Bible is for novice horseback riders who would like to learn tips that they can immediately implement to improve their riding ability and avoid or even overcome common beginner problems. It is for those who want to be the best in their group lessons and accelerate their riding abilities even though they can't ride very often. I have been very, very thoughtful about the methods that I've included in this ebook to ensure that they can be implemented immediately. The only prerequisites are your horse's level of training and understanding. If you hit a bump somewhere and you think maybe your horse isn't getting it, just reach out to me and we can problem solve. My email is Martina, M-A-R-T-I-N-A, at equestrianbootsandbridles.com. Personally, I ride English primarily, and this guide is intended more for English riders. But I do also talk about bareback riding, and a lot of the tips can, in fact, be adapted for use in Western riding. Some methods will work if you are riding bridleless, but not all. Whether you're using a bridle with a bit or a bitless bridle should not really make a difference. Please keep in mind that some of my tips may or may not be acceptable in the competitive environment. These methods are meant to improve your riding experience right now so that you can look like a pro in the saddle in the longer run. How to get the most out of this ebook? There are two ways to go through this book. Number one, you can go through it chronologically. The Beginner Rider's Bible was initially designed to be done like this, in chronological order. I've organized it so that there is a progression from the easiest thing to the most difficult thing, in my opinion. Also, it's organized from the slowest gait to the fastest gait. The second way to go through this ebook is by weakness or by problem. If you're specifically looking to target and fix a weakness that you're noticing in the saddle, this first section of each hack explains the weakness or problem that will be targeted and fixed. Let's say your horse keeps drifting inwards when you try and ride in a circle. You might want to skip ahead to stop falling into circles so you can address that immediately. Please note that there are things like collection that are much easier to achieve once you have achieved good flexion. From this perspective, it is probably best to go through this guide in chronological order. Okay, so let's get started and let's start getting to the good stuff. Chapter 1, Up-Transitioning the Slow Horse. The problem. Your horse won't move forwards. When you're riding a slow horse, it can feel like a workout to get them to go forwards, to go from a halt to a walk, from a walk to a trot, or from a trot to a canter. Have you ever been in a situation where you're squeezing and squeezing and kicking and clucking, but nothing is happening? You just can't seem to get your horse to trot or even walk at a faster pace than what feels like a snail's walk. I absolutely have. I remember thinking to myself, today is going to be a workout, when I knew I'd be asked to lead with my horse Satchmo, who hated leading and would slow right down whenever he'd have to lead in a group lesson. I put this chapter first because school horses tend to be on the slower side, and beginners typically get the slowest horses of all. The common mistake: lack of decisiveness and follow through. The mistake I would always make, and I see other beginner riders make all the time, is just not being firm enough and not following through quickly enough with their aids. Essentially, what would happen to me is that Satchmo would inevitably have to lead at one point or another in my group lesson. When that would happen, I could hardly get him to pick up a brisk walk, let alone anything else. Furthermore, every second of that walk was agonizing. I was constantly squeezing and kicking and clucking. The problem is that I would eventually tire out. I mean, who wouldn't? No one can keep up that amount of effort for very long. So what did Satchmo learn? He learned that if he walked slowly for approximately 1 or 2 minutes, all the pressure of me kicking and squeezing and moving around would stop. Therefore, he learned that all he has to do is ignore me for that amount of time, and then I'll just leave him alone. The best part? Then I take him back behind another horse so that he can follow again, and he's happy because he gets to be in his comfort zone. So, what did I do to fix it? I learned to only ask a horse to do something once, and then escalate the pressure quickly and firmly and decisively until you get the desired transition. The second that you get what you want, you have to remove all the pressure immediately. If, and only if, the horse down transitions, that's when you restart the cycle of adding your aids again. The important part of this is to be very clear, firm, and decisive. What we want to avoid doing at all costs is the following: click, cluck, squeeze, rest, kick, kick, cluck, cluck, rest, squeeze, squeeze, move your hips around, rest, click, cluck, cluck, etc. This sequence of aids is super confusing to the horse and becomes noise that the horse just learns to tune out. This is exactly why many school horses are slow and seemingly immune to cues. We want to especially avoid doing this, continuing to apply pressure when the horse actually starts to trot or the horse up transitions. Even if that trot is the slowest, laziest trot in the world initially, you want to let that horse know that they did good by going from a walk up to a trot. If that horse comes back to a walk, then we want to apply pressure again. But immediately after they start trotting, we want to reward any trot, even if it's the worst, slowest trot in the world. So the second the horse starts to trot, we remove all of our aids. The three hacks you need to know. Number one, you want to ask for more than you want. Think about asking for a canter when you're asking for the trot. Think about asking for the trot when you're asking for a fast walk. Isn't it odd how horses seem to walk really, really fast before finally breaking into a trot, or trotting really, really fast trying to avoid breaking into a canter, you can actually think of the faster gait ahead of time and pretend like you're asking for a gait above what you really want. Sometimes this is all you need to get a slower horse to actually do the gait that you want them to do. Hack number two, your seat is more effective than your leg. In the walk, start to move your seat deliberately as if your horse was starting to trot. Speed it up and almost picture using your bum and hips to urge your horse forwards. School horses can get quite desensitized to leg squeezes, so instead, let's use our seat. Imagine you're the horse and you don't really want to trot. You're happy just meandering around at a nice, relaxed pace. Your rider suddenly starts to squeeze your sides. You think to yourself, meh, I'll just ignore this, and within 1 to 2 minutes, the rider fatigues and the pressure releases. So you come to the conclusion that if you ignore the pressure for 1 to 2 minutes, it goes away, and this is what you learn to do from now on. Now imagine the same situation, but all of a sudden your rider's whole weight is moving around and almost pushing you ahead. You can feel their energy increase significantly on your back. You try your usual trick of ignoring for 1 to 2 minutes, but it's way more annoying and the rider doesn't stop. You're probably starting to think it might just be more comfortable to break into the trot and move along with them. Once your horse moves faster, then your seat suddenly becomes in sync with the horse's movement, and the horse automatically feels a release of pressure. Hack number three, don't wait to use the crop. As I mentioned earlier, we don't want to keep fluctuating in our use of aids. We want to be firm and decisive and only ask the horse once before we escalate our aids. If you're not afraid to use the crop right away, you'll usually only have to use it once in the whole lesson, and then your horse will know that you mean business. I know using the crop can seem mean, but it's not at all when used properly. Think about the fact that horses routinely bite and kick each other to communicate and set boundaries for each other out in the field. They are extremely tough. When you give your horse a clear cue, you have to hold him accountable the first time to execute. If you're using your legs and your seat appropriately, and your horse is just happily ignoring you and looks half asleep, not even registering that he should be thinking about something, then you need to use a stronger aid. Don't wait until the third or fourth time to do this. Use your crop on his shoulder immediately, and then on his hindquarters after that if you still don't get a response. That way, he learns right off the bat, okay, this rider won't let me get away with things, I really have to pay attention, and will be much more likely to listen to cues for the rest of the lesson without the crop. To conclude this chapter, let's go through what you're going to do exactly, step by step, whenever you want to up transition a slower horse. Step number one. Ask the horse to trot with your seat. If there is no response, add on squeezing your legs together. If there is still no response, give one firm kick with both legs. You may cluck once encouragingly. Step two. If you still get no response, you're going to keep your seat moving and keep the pressure on with your legs. And you're going to immediately give one tap on the horse's inside shoulder with the crop. It doesn't have to be a hard tap, but it has to be very quickly after you finish step one if there is no response. Step three. If you still get no response, you're going to keep your seat moving and keep the pressure on with your legs, and you're going to give one tap on the horse's hindquarters with the crop. Again, immediately after step two, if you get no response. Step four. If even now you get no response, you're going to repeat step three again and again with slightly harder taps each time until you get the desired response. Remember, as soon as your horse trots, you relax all of your aids. Make it super easy for him to keep trotting. We'll get into this more in the next section when we talk about keeping pace with a slower horse. If you get to step 4 and you keep tapping and you still don't get a trot, then there is something probably going on with the horse. Either the horse doesn't understand moving forwards and needs to go back to some basic training, or there might be a health issue or an issue with tack. At this point, I would recommend talking to your instructor or the owner of the horse to investigate the issue further. Quick bonus: riders that could go faster but actually lack confidence. I can't count the number of times that my instructor told me I needed a quicker transition or told me that I need to work on increasing the forward pace with my horse. But I secretly did not want to go faster. Honestly, there were times in my riding where I just did not feel confident enough to handle a faster pace. Thinking like this can really hold you back from achieving good up transitions with your horse. Your cues are actually not firm, and I'm convinced that your horse can feel the fact that you don't really want to go any faster, and they're trying to respect that. Even though technically you can do it, your fear is actually holding you back. A lack of confidence or a loss of confidence in horseback riding is super embarrassing. Trust me, I get it. I've been there, but it's also super common. And not just among beginners, among riders of all levels. I have a good friend. Her name is Tash and she's from Australia. She is a superstar dressage rider aiming for the Olympics, who actually experienced paralyzing fear after breaking a bone in her back falling off of her Grand Prix stallion. She miraculously got herself riding again and now teaches other riders how to overcome their riding fears. I myself went through her program when I was trying to teach my 4-year-old gelding when I first got him how to jump for the very first time. And that was the first time I was ever teaching a horse how to jump and the first time I was ever handling a green horse. There's been many, many times in my riding in the past where I've been nervous and I've had issues with my confidence. But this time was definitely the one that I just couldn't get over on my own. If you feel like you're in that position and you just can't get over a fear that you're having right now in the saddle, I totally get it. I have been there. Feel free to reach out to me or keep an eye on your inbox and we can solve this problem together. Advanced bonus: horses that don't understand forward movement. If you're following all the advice that we've talked about in this chapter and your horse still isn't moving forward, likely, again, like we said earlier, it might be an issue with pain, it might be an issue with tack, and it might just be a training issue. That horse just might no longer understand forward movement, or maybe they never did. A good trick for horses that don't understand or have forgotten forward movement is to ride in a round pen or on a lunge line with someone on the ground. Then you slowly transition the cues from the person on the ground asking for forward movement with a lunge whip to the cues from the rider. If you're not sure how to work with a horse on the ground, but you've always wanted to learn, you can stay tuned to the emails that you're going to get over the next couple of days in your inbox. I have a course specifically for those who want to learn horsemanship for beginners. It includes the basics of groundwork, lunging, and much more. Also, I'll have some free tips that really, really helped me to get started in horsemanship coming your way, if that's what you're interested in. Chapter 2: Keeping pace with a slow horse. The problem: your horse slows down before you ask them to. Using the methods from Chapter 1, you're now able to get your horse walking from the halt or trotting from the walk. But what if he almost always slows back down before you ask? Maybe even one lap around the arena is tough to achieve. You can get him to up transition again, but it seems impossible to keep him there at a nice brisk walk or a nice forward trotting pace for very long. The canter might be even worse. Cantering halfway around the arena is a big win before your horse trots again. The common mistake: micromanaging your horse. I remember with my pony Satchmo, I would constantly think to myself, he's about to walk again, I have to keep him going. And I would spend the whole trot squeezing and clucking and kicking. What did Satchmo learn? He learned that when I was riding him, trotting with me on his back really sucked. He thought he was doing the right thing by trotting, but I was making it really hard for him, so he wouldn't want to trot with me for very long. This also ties back to him not wanting to up transition into a trot in the first place. In this situation, if I wanted him to keep happily trotting along, I needed to make the trot easy for him and the walk difficult. In this situation, it is the walk that has to be difficult. It is not slightly slowing down in the trot. Even if he goes back down to the walk, it's vital that I wait until he is actually walking to correct him using the steps from the last chapter. It's only by letting him make the mistake and not trying to micromanage his trot that he's going to learn that trotting with me is fun, and a lot more fun than walking, unless I specifically ask for the walk. The hack you need to know: release all your aids immediately after the transition. When you up transition from the walk to the trot or the trot to the canter, release all of your aids. Don't push faster with your seat. Don't continue squeezing with your legs. Don't keep clucking. You want your horse to feel that release completely so that he knows he did the right thing. You are only to use your aids, and that includes leg, voice, crop, and seat, as per the steps in Chapter 1, after your horse has slowed down into the next slowest gait. So if you're trying to get your horse to trot and then they down transition to a walk, that is when you are going to use your aids, and not a split second before. I know it's hard not to micromanage because we really want to feel in control of our horse at all times. We don't want to be that person in the lesson that starts to walk while everyone else is still trotting, or the person who just can't get their horse to go forwards at all. But we make it so much easier for the horse by releasing all of our aids when we're in the gait that we want. And we're communicating much more clearly if we only reapply our aids once the horse actually down transitions. For example, halts from the walk or walks from the trot. If there's always aids being applied no matter what the horse does in anticipation of him starting to slow down, he's going to get confused. And the first answer he'll give is, should I slow down? Because it's the easiest one for a lazier horse or a horse that doesn't want to go forwards. And then we end up with the exact opposite result that we want. Chapter 3: Keeping pace with a hot horse. The problem: your horse wants to constantly speed up. Have you ever ridden a horse that seems to bolt if anything even touches his sides, or for no reason at all? Many beginner riders haven't encountered this issue because beginners are typically matched with slower, less sensitive horses. If this chapter and the next chapter on hot horses aren't really applicable to you right now, you can feel free to skip over them and come back later. If your horse feels ready to trot away or even maybe gallop the second that you get on him, this chapter is for you. You're anticipating an arm workout when you get on your horse because you know you'll be fighting with the bit the whole time. I have ridden horses like this, and I used to find this issue much, much more difficult to deal with than riding slow horses. Everything would be happening so much faster, and there would be way more fear involved, at least for me. Before I knew it, I would be in a wrestling match for the bit, and that was just not fun at all. I found that my inability to ride these types of horses would take all the fun out of the lesson for me. The common mistake, continuously pulling on the reins. The mistake that you do not want to make when riding these kinds of horses is to continuously pull on the reins. You don't want to keep your legs braced off their sides and try to fight them from even any type of tempo using your reins and pulling on the bit. I know, easier said than done. So, what do you do instead? The three hacks you need to know. Hack number one, circles are your friend. This is by far the most important hack when you're riding a fast horse. You have to get comfortable doing circles, especially tight ones. Horses physically can't ride small circles fast for very long. Barrel horses, for instance, spend ages learning how to collect and balance themselves appropriately and build all that muscle and coordination to just be able to do a few tight circles fast at a time. If your horse starts to pick up speed, pick up just the inside rein in order to circle him, and keep circling him on smaller and smaller circles as needed until he slows down. You can move slightly off the rail and move off onto the inside of the arena out of everyone's way while you're doing this if you're in a group lesson. The second your horse slows down back to the pace that you want, immediately drop your inside rein and let the horse go forwards. Hack number two, ride with a loose rein even though it seems wrong. Some horses, especially fast horses, have learnt that they can brace their head and neck into the bridle because they get always so much pressure pulling on the bit. And this brace actually makes them fall forwards even faster. You don't want to completely drop the reins and have no contact at all, but lengthen them until there is no pressure. Feel free to grab the horse's mane or saddle if you need to help you keep your balance. I know this isn't ideal to make you look like a pro in the saddle, but it's just until you get your balance and feel secure. Keep your shoulders back and keep your seat as heavy and slow as you can. Also, keep your heels pressed down as far as you can with your toes forwards so that your knees are gently hugging the sides of the saddle. As a side note, when I was learning how to ride, one of the biggest issues that I had was my legs would just flap around like crazy. I had the hardest time keeping my legs stable, and this really disturbed my seat. I couldn't keep a deep seat in the saddle. I couldn't keep my heels down. My legs would just flap around all over the place. If this is an issue that you're having and you're struggling with, stay tuned and keep an eye on your inbox because I have some awesome free stuff coming your way that really helped me. Getting back to the content at hand. If your horse starts to speed up, repeat the steps to circle from hack number one by picking up on just the inside rein but leaving your outside rein completely loose. When your horse slows down again, then immediately drop that inside rein and let your horse go forwards. Hack number three, use more leg, even though it seems wrong. Just like sometimes horses fall into the bit, others are super sensitive to any pressure on their sides. Logically, riders learn to brace their legs away from a horse that tends to go fast. Beginners especially tend to want to do this, but what those horses end up learning is to be even more sensitive to any leg pressure because they're just not used to any. So what you want to actually do is use your leg more often. When you're circling your horse, as in hack number one, you should already have your toes forwards and your knees hugging the sides of your saddle. This is going to apply pressure to the sides of the horse. Avoid having your toes pointing outwards and your legs braced off your horse. While you're circling, your horse will eventually start to slow down, as we talked about. Horses can't keep going fast as they do tighter and tighter circles. So as he's slowing down more and more, give him a hug with your legs around his belly. You want your horse getting used to the feeling of your legs so that they're not so stimulating. Quick bonus, fighting your instincts when you're nervous. I don't know about you, but when I used to ride fast horses, when I was starting, I would be terrified. When we're scared, the natural thing for our body to do is to go as close as possible to the fetal position. I know, it seems super silly, but I swear it's true. What that means is that our knees come up towards our chest, our shoulders come forwards, our toes point downwards. Essentially, we're trying to become a ball to protect ourselves and our essential internal organs. We also tighten up a lot and all of our muscles stiffen. Unfortunately, this is the opposite of what you want to do when you're riding a fast horse, which is keep your heels down, keep your toes forward and your knees against the saddle, keep as large of a hip angle as possible between your torso and your thigh, which translates to keeping your leg as long as possible while still having your feet directly below your hips. You want your shoulders directly above your hips, and it will probably feel like you're leaning back because of the urge to bring your shoulders forward. You want your elbows back, and you want all your muscles to feel relaxed but controlled. You might want to head over to the ebook guide at this point just to take a look at some of the pictures that I've posted for a better idea of what I was just talking about in that last bit. The only way to fight your instincts is to consciously keep reminding yourselves. I use two word cues and I'll repeat them to myself when I'm riding. This seems to work well for me. For instance, if I can feel myself off balance, I'll say, shoulders back, heels down, knees in, toes forward, elbows back, breathe deeply. The breathe deeply cue specifically helps me so much when I'm nervous. I won't even realize it, but I'll tighten up so much that I won't breathe. I'll literally just be holding my breath. You'd be so surprised how much just breathing deeply a few times while you're riding makes a world of difference to how your body is and how much more relaxed your muscles will get. But I totally get it. This is all easier said than done. Sometimes our fear and lack of confidence goes a little bit deeper, and deep breaths just don't cut it. Again, as I mentioned previously, this is where my friend Tash from Australia might really, really be able to help. If this is where you think you are and you might need some help overcoming some fear issues and gaining back your confidence, keep an eye on your inbox because I've got something special for you. Quick bonus 2, keeping your heels down and your lower leg position steady. I've already talked about earlier in this book how I really struggled with my lower leg position and that my legs literally used to flap around when I was riding. And I am not exaggerating. In fact, there was certain times where I would be recorded and I would watch the video recordings of me riding and my toes would be pointing directly down. I don't even know how I managed to do that, but I swear that's what happened. Keeping a steady lower leg position can be difficult at the best of times. Now add that to a horse that's going fast and you have to keep doing small circles over and over again. That's when it can get even more challenging. I mentioned this already a few times, but it's so important that I wanted to dedicate an entire little bonus section to it so that it stood out. Keeping your heels down with your weight and as much in your heels as possible is a huge way to help stabilize your legs when you're riding. Another way that's a lot less obvious and less well known is the position of your knees. If you point your toes directly forwards, it might feel at first as if you're pointing them in like a pigeon. But what this will do will force your hips to internally rotate, and this will bring your knees together. This will keep the insides of your knees hugging the saddle. You shouldn't be pressing in. You shouldn't be trying to hold your position together by clamping down with your knees. But just the action of pointing your toes forward will help your knees feel connected to the saddle. This will help significantly in stabilizing your leg. I used to struggle so much with my heel mobility and my leg position. I tried and tried and tried to help my heel mobility and to improve my dorsiflexion, or the ability to get my heels down and my toes up. I knew that this would help me with my lower leg position. The problem was I was physically unable to do it because my ankles were just so stiff. If this is an issue for you, keep an eye on your inbox, because fixing this issue is going to completely revolutionize the way that you ride. You're going to feel so much more stable and secure in the saddle, and it will help you exponentially when you're starting to do a lot more work at the canter, and especially if you're interested in learning how to jump. Advanced bonus: horses that lack emotional regulation. Some horses go fast, not actually because they like going fast, but because they're really anxious and wound up. Their brains just can't stop and relax and are going at 100 miles a minute, and their bodies represent that, because horses don't have a filter in terms of what they think is just what their body's going to end up doing. The following is by no means a fix-all technique. And if you do find yourself on a horse that you feel like is just anxious or reactive, then remember that safety always comes first and consider asking for a different horse, or consult your instructor or the owner of the horse for help. My personal tip to calm these horses down is circling to a stop. You essentially follow the same steps as from hack one of this chapter until the horse completely stops. Once the horse completely comes to a halt, only then do you release your inside rein. Every time you feel like your horse is getting wound up again when you're riding, you want to repeat this process. If you are interested in techniques like this and you want to learn more about working your way through horse issues, understanding horses, and getting acquainted with horsemanship, keep an eye on your inbox, because I have some special free things coming your way. Chapter 4, Down Transitioning the Hot Horse. The problem: your horse won't slow down. We already talked about keeping a steady pace using circles, dropping the reins, and increasing how much you're using your leg. But what about actually slowing down from a canter to a trot, or a trot to the walk, or a walk to a halt? Do you feel like you have to use way too much rein, or that your horse just doesn't respond to anything that you do, not even your seat? The common mistake: using too much rein and too little else. The common mistake is similar to what we talked about in Chapter 3. Too much rein and too little leg as you're bracing your legs off the horse. Likely, there's quite a bit of fighting with the horse before they down transition. I learned this the hard way. I want to take a minute to tell you about an extreme situation of making this mistake. Whether you're doing it to down transition or just to try and keep a slower, steadier pace with a horse that's going very fast. When I was riding a horse that I had previously leased, his name was Dash, I was trying to get him jumping. He was advertised as this amazing jumper after all. Up until that point, he'd refused every single jump we tried, and I had a very hard time controlling him during flat work because he was very, very forward. So I also didn't really have the confidence to start jumping with him yet. After fighting with him for an evenly paced trot and a bunch of up and then down transitions, and even a bit of cantering with a few down transitions back to the trot, I decided that I was just going to try one very low cavalletti at a walk to see how he would do with it. What did he do? Dash ended up clipping his front hoof on the cavalletti at a walk, spooked like crazy, and then bolted and proceeded to start bucking and then just bucked me off when I couldn't down transition him. I didn't know it at the time, but what had happened there was that by that point in the ride, he was so stressed out by all our back and forth tugging around that even the littlest thing totally set him off. It's not that he was completely terrified of cavalettis, but rather that that was just the last straw of the day for him. In this hack, not only are you going to learn how to down transition your horse, but also how you can avoid escalating situations with your horse, especially if that horse is pretty wound up and likes going forward. By using the hacks below, you'll keep your horse relaxed and focused on you. Typically, the more relaxed your horse is, the easier it is to slow them down, and the slower naturally that they become. The three hacks you need to know. First, you want to try using your aids normally. Start by slowing down your seat and getting heavy, while consciously pushing your weight into your heels and pushing your hips backwards into the back of saddle each time your horse takes a step. You'll feel like you're arching your back slightly over and over and over again in the rhythm with the horse's movement. If this doesn't work, take and soften with the reins. You can also add one voice command, although this isn't quite typical in English riding. For example, saying "whoa" in a deep, slow voice. Number one, circles are your friend. We've talked about this in previous chapters. As you might be starting to recognize, I'm a big fan of circles. If your horse is not listening to your aids, keep all your aids on and simultaneously pick up on the inside rein to bend your horse's head to the inside. Keep circling him in tighter and tighter circles until he slows down to your desired gait. The second he down transitions, drop the inside rein and let him go forwards. Also, at the same time, you want to stop all your other aids. We are effectively making the wrong thing hard and the right thing easy. If your horse slows down, all of the pressure on him completely releases, and that's how he knows he did the right thing. Hack number two, give him a hug with your legs. You're again using your down transition aids. While you're doing all of these things, i.e. slowing and deepening your seat and applying pressure with your reins, slightly taking and softening. At the same time, try gently hugging his sides with your legs while you let your seat really sink into the saddle. I know this is counterintuitive, but it really works some of the time with certain horses. Hack number three, my approach to relaxing horses that are wound up. I've recently just added this hack in here, and I debated for a while whether to include it in this ebook or not. It is really beyond the level of beginner riding. However, as a beginner, I ended up on my fair share of fast and stressed out horses, and if I had known this, it would have saved me so many falls. What you're doing is you're essentially teaching your horse how to self-soothe and calm themselves. We already covered this a bit in the last chapter, but we're going to really break it down and talk about it step by step. So if you're riding a horse that you know is fast in your next lesson, I would recommend coming to that lesson early if you can, and just doing this exercise with your horse. Of course, only do this if you feel safe. I really find that the following exercise mellows that horse out, gets them focused on you, and just gets them calm. Step one, walk in a circle until halt. What you want to do is you want to start on a walk with your horse. Likely your horse is going to walk really quickly and want to break into the trot. What you want to do is pick up on your inside rein, leave your outside rein loose, and bring your horse's head to the inside. Circle your horse without any aids at all. No inside leg, no outside leg, no outside rein. All you want is pretty tight contact with the inside rein so that your horse's head bends to the inside. This will obviously start them circling. Keep walking in a circle. Keep walking. If your horse is walking and walking and walking in a circle and just doesn't stop, try making the circle a little bit tighter. And just keep doing this and holding your inside rein steady until your horse stops. Once your horse stops, drop the inside rein and let your horse just relax for a little bit. After a few minutes, you're going to repeat this in a trot. Step two, trot in a circle until halt. Now you're going to ask for the trot. Likely, your trot is going to be two forwards. He's going to keep trotting and trotting and trotting faster and faster and faster. You might even want to break into a canter. He might do this right away, or he might need to trot for a little bit for his trot to kind of get excited. As soon as you find that the trot is not what you want it to be, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to pick up on your inside rein. You're not going to use any other aids, no outside rein, no inside leg, no outside leg. You're just going to pick up on the inside rein and you're slowly going to bring it closer to your body, asking his head to bend to the inside. This is going to start him going in a circle. Keep trotting in a circle. Slowly make the circle tighter and tighter. And then once the circle is pretty much as tight as it can be while still feeling balanced for you and the horse, just keep your inside rein at that level. Keep it holding it steady and don't do anything else. Let your horse just keep trotting until eventually he'll break down into a walk and then eventually he'll break down into a halt. What this will do is this will force your horse to just essentially tire himself out to the point that he has to stop, and it teaches your horse to kind of self-soothe mentally. Step three, optional, repeat with the canter. Essentially, you do the same steps as in step one and two, except you're at the canter. Only do this if you feel safe doing it. One thing to keep in mind is that when you're cantering, you're going much faster than at the trot, especially if you're on a horse that likes to go forward. So when you pick up on that inside rein, you can't do it too aggressively because it will throw both you and the horse off balance. So you'll want to be pretty gentle on picking up on the inside rein initially, and then as your horse slows down, you can pick up on it more and more and more, making those circles tighter and tighter. Step four. Use step one, two, and or three as needed in your lesson. So you can use step one and two and three if you want. Before you even start riding in your next lesson or group lesson, if you can get to the barn a little bit early, this will help mellow your horse out in preparation for your lesson. But also while you're riding your lesson, you want to use these steps as needed if you feel like your horse is starting to get away from you. The emergency break. In an emergency only. Disclaimer. This method is abrupt and it can throw both you and the horse way out of balance. As such, it is meant to be used in an emergency situation only. The previous steps are used right as you feel your horse is starting to get away from you so your horse can still easily circle. If your horse just suddenly bolts, this is where you want to use an emergency break. So picture you and the horse going at 100 miles a minute, and this is the situation where you want to be using this. If your horse just constantly bolts over and over and over again, and you feel like you're in a situation where you have to use the emergency brake over and over again, this is very dangerous. And I would really think about whether it's safe for you to be riding that horse. There is likely some underlying training issues that really need to be dealt with before the horse should be ridden, and especially be ridden by a beginner. Of course, any horse, no matter how well trained, could potentially get spooked and bolt every once in a while. This method is designed to get you slowed down as soon as possible to give you the highest chance of staying on and staying safe. To employ the emergency brake, do the following. Number 1, sit as deep in the saddle as possible. Number 2, get your weight into your heels. Number 3, lean back, preparing for a sudden stop. You can also hang on to some mane or the saddle if you need to. Number 4, slide your free hand down, halfway down one rein, and slowly pull back all the way to the hip. You're aiming to flex your horse's head to about 45 to 60 degrees. Make sure you don't do this suddenly or all at once. Make sure you do it slowly so that you don't completely throw your horse out of balance. Number 5, once your horse is circling, hold the inside rein there until a complete halt, and then dismount right away. Pulling back the rein initially requires a little bit of feel. If you pull back too fast, your horse or you could easily lose balance, and this could be dangerous. To practice the feel, do step 1 to 3 above, as I mentioned, as practice. Chapter 5, My Secret Walk to Trot Aid. The problem, your walk to trot transition is not quick or smooth. In chapters 1 to 2, we covered how to ask your horse to go forwards in a very clear way. Even when you get your horse to go forwards, however, you might find you're not getting that lovely smooth trot transition that you see others getting. Your trot might feel a little bit off balance, and then it might start to feel bouncy, and it might feel all over the place. It might feel hard to keep your lower leg in a stable position and keep yourself balanced in a seat. This last part, as I've mentioned already a few times, is something I'm very familiar with because I used to have the stiffest ankles in the world, so it was impossible for me to keep my heels down and my lower leg stable. If I felt bouncy at all in the trot, my lower legs would move around all over the place and I'd be very prone to losing my stirrups and losing my balance completely. It took me a long time before I finally realized all the different things that actually went into fixing that problem. But back to the walk to trot transition. When it feels off balance, like what we just talked about, what's typically happening is that the horse is pulling itself and you forwards with their front legs. They're doing this rather than pushing forwards with their hindquarters. Don't you wish your horse could just read your mind and pick up a lovely trot the second you ask? I remember watching dressage horses easily trot off with their riders, and it looked completely effortless for both. The common mistake: expecting a good transition from a bad setup. The difference between a beginner and an advanced rider is their ability to set the horse up correctly for what's coming next. If your horse is walking slowly, is half asleep, is bent in a weird way with their shoulder in and their head the other way, it's going to be much more difficult to accomplish a nice and smooth trot transition and get a nice energetic trot. Another common mistake is trying to follow the horse's movements with your seat. It's actually much more effective to use your seat to set the movement and then expect your horse to match up to that movement. The two hacks you need to know. Hack number 1, prepare the walk in order to trot. You want your walk to be forward and energetic. You also want to try to keep your horse's body straight. You don't want the head flexed in one direction or the other, and you don't want the shoulder coming in or butting out. Hack number 2. Your seat is always better than your legs. We've already talked a few times about using your seat instead of your legs in earlier chapters. What I've learned over the years is that your seat is so vital as a communication tool with horses. I remember coaches telling me that all the time, but I never really internalized it until later in my riding. It felt so much more natural to use my legs, and I also didn't fully understand what using my seat meant. What I thought I was supposed to do was try and follow the horse's movement with my seat. And I would try and try and try and do this, but mostly it felt off. Using your seat communicates to your horse more clearly, and it makes you look like a far more sophisticated rider than just kicking and squeezing all the time. What you really want to do in order to do this is you want to be in control. So you want to be the one that sets the motion with your seat. Your horse will naturally try and follow what your seat is doing. And this is what creates that beautiful in sync look and feel. So instead of you constantly trying to match what your horse is doing, you set the pace and expect your horse to match you. So while walking, try to move your seat deliberately as if your horse was starting to trot. Speed it up and almost picture using your bum and hips to urge your horse forwards as if you were already trotting. Another way to think of this is imagine that you're riding the sitting trot and essentially mimic that motion on a horse that's walking. Once the horse starts moving faster, your seat suddenly becomes in sync with the horse's movement. And the horse feels an immediate release of pressure because you're not moving all over the place on top of him, and rather the two of you are moving together. I know it probably feels super silly. After over-exaggerating it a few times, your horse will start understanding what you mean much faster, and you'll be able to just use the most subtle movement of your seat to move your horse into the trot once you get the hang of it. The trick to using your seat is to set the pace that you want to go at, rather than trying to mimic your horse's pace. You want to set the pace with your seat. You don't want to follow the horse's movements. You actually want your horse to follow your movements. The same principle of slowing down your seat in order to communicate with your horse that you want to slow down is used for the trot to walk transition with your horse. Chapter 6. Actually sitting the sitting trot. The problem. Your sitting trot feels bouncy and unstable. Have you ever felt like you could bounce right out of the saddle at any moment trying to sit the trot on a prancing horse? Or wake up the next day after a lesson and you feel like every inch of your bum is bruised? Or have you ever felt like your lower back might just snap right in half when you keep trying to sit the sitting trot? I don't know about you, but I know that I definitely used to feel this way. Counterintuitively, I have found that learning how to sit the sitting trot is the easiest to do bareback. I know. You're probably thinking this girl is crazy, she's got it backwards. But if you're sitting the trot correctly, you'll actually find it the easiest to do bareback. It's impossible to be out of sync with your horse if you're riding bareback. You're either in sync or you're falling off. Of course, this is probably not the best way to learn if you're just starting. A Western saddle, on the other hand, supports your seat on all sides and allows you to sit in a relatively deactivated fashion. This means you can stay on even if you're not in sync with your horse at all and not sitting the trot properly at all. You might have even heard that it's bad for your horse and to stay away from it altogether. Personally, I think that if the sitting trot is done properly and if your horse is trained properly and developed properly, then it's not bad for them. Either way, I think we can agree that learning how to sit a sitting trot can be difficult. The common mistake: trying to move with your horse. We talked about this a lot in the last chapter. The mistake I used to make all the time, and I would wonder why I still felt like I was bouncing all over the place, was that I would try and move my hips with the horse and go in sync with the horse. At this point, you're definitely thinking, ugh, this girl is nuts. She just said to be in sync with the horse, so shouldn't I try and be in sync with the horse? Well, yes, of course. I want you to be in sync with the horse 100%. And that is what I wanted for myself, and that is what I want for you. But I've realized that the way to do it is actually not by trying to follow your horse's movements. So how do you actually engage your seat and become in sync with your horse? The two hacks you need to know. Hack number one, it's all about the core. When you're sitting the trot, you want to do the following. Number one, pull your belly button and squeeze it towards your spine. Number two, activate your core. Number three, perform a slight posterior pelvic tilt. What this is going to feel like is pulling your pubic bone towards your head, the front of your pubic bone towards your head slightly, and tucking your bum underneath. The key to sitting a sitting trot is to do all of these three actions in time to your horse's trot so that you move your bum with the horse and it ends up being squeeze, 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 squeeze with your core while the horse goes trot, 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 trot. So again, let's go over the three things. Number one, pull in your belly button in towards your spine. Number two, activate your core, which goes directly hand in hand with number one. Number three, perform a slight posterior pelvic tilt, which is going to feel like you tucking your bum in underneath and pulling your pubic bone slightly above, up to your head. This is very much a you have to feel it to get it type of movement. So just keep trying, and I guarantee once it clicks, you'll be able to ride any trot, maybe with the exception of the most bouncy trots in the world, and you'll do it no problem. Hack number two, trot bareback. This is totally optional because I get that it's scary and it just might not be suitable for you depending on your level of riding. Without a doubt, it is the fastest way to learn because it forces your body to do everything in hack one just in order to stay on. But that doesn't mean it's the safest or the best way for you. I think of it like learning handstands. You can either just start handstanding and take the falls, or you can do a series of controlled progressions. The first is definitely faster, but the second is definitely safer. My bonus trick to help you sit the trot by staying in sync with your horse is not to try to follow their movements. Again, we've talked about this a few times, but I really want to hammer it home. I already told you that this was the mistake that I used to make all the time. Instead, I want you to try to set the pace that you want of the trot. So I want you to decide how fast you want your horse to trot. Put that pace in your head, and that's how I want you to move your body. So think in your head, I want this horse to go trot, 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 and I want you to start moving your body like that, and I think you'll notice that your horse will start trotting to match your body movements. This is exactly like what we did in the last chapter when we were talking about trot to walk transitions and walk to trot transitions. Quick bonus, getting over the fear of riding bareback. I remember when I first learned how to ride bareback, I was terrified. I learned initially how to ride in an English saddle. So the idea of going now without a saddle was really, really intimidating. I had actually watched a friend try to ride bareback, and when they got on, the horse immediately bucked them off. After that, I was pretty much scarred. Eventually, what happened was that I was in a group lesson scenario, and it was too embarrassing not to ride bareback because everyone was doing it that day. I did it that one day and it went fine, but then when I took a long break from riding and returned back to it, I realized I was terrified of riding bareback all over again. The next time I rode bareback, I went on vacation, and again, everyone was doing it, so I was just too embarrassed not to. I got on bareback and it was fine. I don't really have a great way of getting over this fear besides to just do it and starting small. For me,
what actually pushed me to do it and ride bareback was the embarrassment of being the only one too scared not to do it. Sometimes this is a good as motivator as any. However, another way to do it is starting small and gradually building up. This is something that has always worked for me in every aspect of my life. For instance, ask someone, a friend or your instructor, to lead you around on a horse bareback the first time so that you know the horse is very controlled, can't go fast, and can't take off on you. Then you can slowly progress to going around on a lunge line. So maybe somebody's not leading you, but they're controlling the horse on a lunge line so you know the horse can't just take off. From there, you can slowly progress from a walk to a trot, and eventually you'll get more and more comfortable to the point that you can start trotting on your own without somebody lunging you. However, I know sometimes our fear and lack of confidence goes a little bit deeper than the just do it approach, and it's just too terrifying to even start anywhere. Being scared, especially when it comes to horseback riding, is super embarrassing. I totally get it. This is exactly what pushed me to go bareback in the first place when I was terrified. It was a fear of embarrassment. But being scared is super common among riders of all levels. It's just something that no one really talks about. So again, going back to my friend from Australia, she is the best at helping riders overcome their fears. So if overcoming fear is something that you feel like is really important to your level of riding, again, keep an eye on your inbox because I have something pretty cool coming to you. Chapter 7, Mastering Flexion Once and For All. The problem: you can't achieve the right amount of bend in your horse. Whenever I would try to flex my horse's head, it would invariably overflex, underflex, or not flex at all. Meanwhile, the whole body of the horse would be falling in or drifting out of whatever circle, semicircle, or bend I was trying to ride. One thing that happened all the time is that I would be trying to ride a circle with a lesson horse I used to ride named Lucy. When Lucy fell inwards, I would try and squeeze my inside leg or pull with my outside rein. This, of course, did the opposite of what I wanted. It created an S bend in her rather than the nice C-shaped bend I wanted, because I would pull on the outside rein and her head would go to the outside while her shoulder was still coming to the inside. Since this would happen on almost all of our circles, it would make it impossible for her to move in a nice, collected fashion. For the longest time, I didn't really understand what collection even meant. I thought if there was bit contact, then the horse was collected. It turns out that if the horse has been developed properly and we ride them in the way that their bodies were meant to move, they will start to collect themselves. They'll push up and forwards with their hindquarters and up through their backs, lifting the rider up with them. If you have any questions about collection at all, feel free to reach out and we can discuss it more. What about you? Does your coach always tell you to flex your horse's head, but you can't either seem to flex at all, or your whole horse's body moves right along with his head, or you're flexing your horse's head in the direction that they're not supposed to be flexed? Do you struggle to bend your horse's head and the rest of their body at the same time for a nice C-shaped bend along the circle that you're riding? Here are the three scenarios where flexion always went wrong for me. Number one, I would use my inside rein, but Lucy's whole body would move in and she would fall into the circle, and I would get actually no neck or body flexion whatsoever. She would just, her whole body would move in. Scenario number two, I would try and flex to the inside, but she would flex way too much, way too quickly. So her head would flex to the inside, but her shoulder and her whole body would keep moving to the outside, and she would slowly drift over away from the inside. Scenario number three. Lucy would flex appropriately, but her body either way would start falling into the direction she was flexing. So she would be flexed, but she would consistently fall into the circle that I was making and therefore make a smaller and smaller and smaller circle. The common mistake: overturning the head and underturning the shoulders. You might have already picked up on the mistake that I was making. I was overturning her head in every single situation. I would pull her inside rein so she did what she had been taught, given to the pressure. I would pull her outside rein and she also did what she had been taught, given to the pressure. She was actually making things more difficult for herself because she was doing what she thought I wanted from her rather than what was easiest for her body to do. The hack you need to know: gently take and soften instead of pulling. This is one of the simplest tricks that I've learned, and it works like a charm. Whether you're standing still, trotting, cantering, this is the best thing to do to get just enough bend in your horse's body. Instead of pulling on the rein in the direction that you want your horse's head and therefore body to start bending to, gently take and soften with that rein. And I mean seriously gentle. Just use the weight of two fingers to pull back, release, pull back, release, pull back, release, until you get the desired amount of bend. Don't change any of your other aids. Don't do anything fancy. Just let your horse ride the trot and very slowly, or any other gait, and very slowly change the amount they're flexing until it's just where you want it to be. Once it's there, stop asking and just hold everything steady. Remember, we are making the right thing easy and the wrong thing hard for our horses. A good thing to do is to practice this when you're just at a halt and see if you can get it working good. Then practice at a walk, then at a trot, and finally at a canter if you feel comfortable. Now that you've established good flexion, let's move to the next chapter and talk about how to keep your horse going on a perfect circle in the direction of that flexion so that your horse doesn't start falling into the circle. Chapter 8, stop falling into circles. The problem: drifting inwards on a circle. Remember the three scenarios that I was talking about in the last chapter that I used to struggle with Lucy? We're now going to address scenario number 3, where Lucy would be flexing the right amount, but her body would start to fall into the circle, and we would drift slowly inwards and make smaller and smaller and smaller circles. Does that sound familiar? Your horse's body keeps falling into the middle of circles that you're riding. You want to correct him with your outside rein because that seems like the most intuitive thing. However, the second you pull on the outside rein, you lose that inside flexion that you just spent all of last chapter learning how to get. Your coach keeps repeating for you to use your inside leg, inside leg, inside leg. So you're squeezing with that inside leg as hard as you can, but it doesn't seem to make any difference at all. This used to happen to me all the time. The common mistake: pulling on the outside rein. We've already discussed that what you don't want to do is pull on the outside rein, because then you're going to lose that beautiful inside flexion that you were having, and your horse's head isn't going to be bent nicely along the arc of the circle. Instead, your horse's head is going to now be bent to the outside, and your horse is going to be in a weird S shape. So just as I had started to figure out how to get that right amount of flexion that we talked about last chapter, I would be back at square one, because she'd be in that S shape, because intuitively I would want to pull on that outside rein to prevent her from drifting into the circle. I would do that because I would want to fix the fact that she was falling into the circle and making smaller and smaller circles. Another common mistake is actually to rely just on your inside leg. A lot of instructors will actually say inside leg, inside leg, inside leg to help push your horse to the outside of a circle and make a bigger circle. Your leg alone won't actually help. if your horse doesn't have the support necessary to ride that circle in a perfect bend. So how do you give your horse the support that they need in order to fix the issue? The two hacks you need to know. Hack number one, hold pressure on the outside rein from the very beginning, but don't pull. From the second that you start to take and soften with the inside rein to obtain your flexion, you want to hold pressure with that outside rein, and you want to make sure that the whole time you feel a solid contact with your horse's mouth. That means you want to feel your horse's mouth, and as they start to turn their head, you do not want to give any slack at all, but you also don't want to pull. You want to have that contact from your outside hand to the outside portion of the bit. When your horse starts to flex their heads toward the inside, you're naturally going to feel the pressure in the outside hand increase as the horse turns his head inwards and away from that hand. Even though you feel the pressure increasing, you do not want to give in at all and move your hands forward. In fact, you want to hold your outside hand completely steady and don't release at all. If your horse starts to fall in, you can very, very, very slightly increase the pressure on the outside rein, but don't feel your hand pulling back. Just close your hand a little bit tighter on that rein. If there's any loss of the inside flexion when you do this, take and soften again with the inside rein while still maintaining the pressure on the outside rein. Hack number two, use your inner thigh. As I mentioned earlier, you can't solely rely on your inside leg. That outside rein pressure that you're going to hold that we talked about in hack one is going to be so important. Your horse needs that support on the outside of their body that you're providing by holding the contact with the outside rein. But you still want to use the inside leg to help you out. When you're applying pressure with your inside leg, it's intuitive to use your lower leg and your heel because that's usually what we're taught to do, especially when we're starting to ride. When you're keeping a horse in flexion and pushing the body outwards, you want to actually use a different part of your leg as well. You want to use your inside upper thigh and your inside knee. When you have your feet in the stirrups, in order to point your toe directly forward, you actually need to internally rotate slightly at the hip because your knees and hips are bent. So if you kept your hips neutral, you would end up with your toes slightly rotated outwards. So if you're riding in a correct position with your toes pointing forwards, like we've talked about already in previous chapters, you're going to have an internal rotation at the hips, and the inner part of your thigh should be in contact with the saddle already. When you're flexing your horse, you want to imagine that you're flexing your horse around this part of your body, aka your inner thigh, that is gently glued against the inside part of the saddle because your toes are forward. The tighter the circle, the tighter the flexion around that part of your thigh. If you really pay attention, you'll notice that if your horse starts to fall into the circle, you'll feel the pressure of his shoulder and his body against that part of your inner thigh. And that is the part that you want to push right back against him with. Note that this same trick works with drifting to the outside of a circle, and that time you just want to use the outside inner thigh. So overall, you want to use the inside thigh as well as your lower leg to apply pressure in addition to holding pressure with your outside rein. You need all of these things working together if you want to keep your horse from falling into a circle. If this doesn't work, and you're doing all of this, and your horse is still moving to the inside of a circle, then you can use two things to support your inside leg at the same time. Number one, you want to try to give your horse a few kicks with your knee on the inside. So just as if you were putting pressure with your lower leg, if your horse doesn't respond to that, you would move up to some kicks. In the same way, if you apply pressure with the inside of your thigh and your knee and your horse isn't respecting that, you want to actually give a few kicks with your inside knee. If your horse still doesn't respond to that, that's when you can use your crop on the inside shoulder. Just as if we talked about with earlier chapters, you don't want to keep asking over and over again. You want to ask once, and if your horse doesn't respond, you want to quickly escalate to your stronger aids. Quick bonus. If your horse is not responding to your inside leg. So if you've done all of this and you've escalated your aids and everything that we just talked about, and your horse still isn't responding, what do you do? What I've noticed is that a pitfall that beginner riders sometimes have when they're using one leg really aggressively is that they tend to lean to that side. So if you're using your inside leg and squeezing and kicking, you actually might be leaning towards the inside with your whole body. Think about if you were giving somebody a piggyback. If you're giving somebody a piggyback ride and they're leaning to the left, your body is going to want to go to the left. If you're giving somebody a piggyback ride and they want you to go to the left and you want to go to the left, but then they start leaning to the right, it's going to be harder for you to go to the left. This is the same thing with your horse. If you want your horse to stop falling into the circle, you do not want to lean in that same direction. So if you're using your inside leg, you're using your inside leg, but you're also leaning towards the inside, even though your horse knows that they should be moving away from the pressure, they might also be feeling your whole body leaning towards the inside, and therefore they might be starting to drift in that direction because that's the direction that your whole body weight is going to. So a quick tip that you can do is actually consciously think about keeping most of your weight a little bit more in the outside stirrup. So ideally, you just keep your weight directly in the saddle. But what I've noticed really helps beginners is that if you actually think about consciously moving even some of your weight to the outside stirrup, this can really, really, really help all of your other aids as you're trying to keep your horse from drifting into a circle. Chapter 9. The Shortcut to Collection, Advanced Chapter. The problem: your horse travels slower but isn't soft in the mouth. So if you're trying to achieve collection and you're trying to get your horse soft in the mouth and getting energy moving from the hindquarters, you're starting to do something that's very advance in my personal opinion. So that's why I've added this, because I know that a lot of beginners want to immediately start learning collection. However, it is very, very advanced, and it took me years to even start learning collection. This problem, where your horse travels slower but isn't soft in the mouth, it comes from trying to muscle a horse into collection using the reins so that they bend their necks, but they aren't properly formed in their bodies. Trying to collect a horse that is prancing, fighting at the bit, or tossing his head can be a challenge. Your horse needs to be focused on you and on movement. It's more athletically challenging for your horse to move in a collected manner, but it makes those tight circles and other movements when riding much easier too. Remember, your horse is a lot stronger than you are. Also, just because a horse's neck is bent and they're moving a bit slower doesn't actually mean they're collected. Collection means bigger, longer, stretched out movements of the legs and energy coming from the hindquarters. This can sometimes create a feeling of going slower and more deliberately. But in fact, if your horse is more collected, they usually have a more energetic feel to their gait. Your horse should really have all the weight in the hindquarters, and that will actually give you an impression of going uphill because your horse will be having energy through their back legs, through to their back, and pushing their back upwards, and you'll actually feel more lifted up in the saddle. You want your horse to power through his hindquarters, push up through his back, and stretch forward through his neck. The purpose of keeping the horse's neck bent and contact with the bit is to recycle that energy so that the horse can use that energy to go faster and do more athletic movements. When your horse stretches forward into the bit, that's a pretty good indication you're on the right track. But notice how you can't muscle your way there. Just holding tighter and tighter onto the reins and getting your horse's neck to curve doesn't actually mean anything. In fact, if you force that posture on the horse, it will drop back in order to crane the neck, and it might actually be counterproductive. Also, this causes a lot of horses to toss their heads and become more and more restless. So what do you do? How do you achieve collection? In my experience, you really have to let your horse find collection on his own. You can't really push him to do it. To do this, you have to make it easy for him to move in a collected way. In fact, you have to make it easier for him to move in to move in a collected way than to not move in a collected way. The common mistake: muscling the horse into collecting with the reins. Pulling more and more on the bit so that your horse's neck cranes and thus forcing the look of a collected horse doesn't actually get your horse collected. It doesn't really matter so much what your horse's neck is doing. In a well-developed horse, the neck will start to lift up and they'll naturally look for the bit pressure as they have a lot of energy coming up through their hindquarters and up through their back. So they'll want that connection with the bit. But that's a byproduct of collection and not the end result. Collection is a way for the whole horse to be moving. We can make it easier for the horse to achieve, but we cannot force it. The horse has to figure out collection on its own. If you have a horse that is well developed and trained and understands collection, then all you have to do is make it easy for him to do it. If your horse has a swaying back and you suspect he might have weakness and a poorly developed top line, or if you're not sure about any of this, feel free to reach out to me and we can chat a little bit more about it together. Again, like I mentioned, this stuff is quite advanced in my opinion. So if you're a little bit lost, reach out to me and we can go through everything. So how do you make it easy for the horse to establish collection? Circles that get smaller and smaller. The hack you need to know. Circles are your friend. I think we've talked about circles more than anything else in this book so far, and for good reason. Circles are really, really your friend when it comes to learning how to ride well. Riding a small circle becomes more and more challenging for the horse. At a certain point, it will be too difficult unless the horse collects himself. Then it will become much easier. Now that you've learned how to obtain proper flexion and how to stop your horse from falling into circles that you ride, you're going to use your perfectly circular circles to collect your horse. You're going to trot nested circles until you feel that slower, more deliberate, more balanced, more uphill feeling of collection. You also don't want to pull back on the reins to find connection with your horse's mouth. You don't want to wait until he reaches out into the bit. And then you want to just hold your hands there to provide steady contact and support. Notice how I don't talk at all about where your horse's neck is. We really don't want to focus on that. Younger, less developed horses that aren't as strong yet can't actually collect in the way that we expect, and they will naturally stretch their necks down to the ground. Don't fight this, just let it happen. What's really important that we talked about in previous chapters is keeping that outside hand steady. You really don't want your outside hand moving forwards as your horse looks for bit contact. You want to hold that outside hand as still as possible. A really good trick is to hold it against your saddle, and that way you can make it you can make sure that it's not moving at all. You also want to make sure that you're taking and softening with the inside rein to get that proper flexion to the inside, just as we talked about in the previous chapter. Those are the two main things that will make it super easy for your horse to find collection. A final tip that I think is sometimes really important is, although you're holding your outside hand steady, sometimes the slightest taking and softening with that outside rein on the opposite timing of the inside rein can make it easy for your horse to collect. So take with the inside rein, take and soften with the inside rein, and while you're softening with the inside rein, do the slightest take with the outside rein. So it's kind of like a seesaw effect that you're doing with the reins, but very, very, very subtle. At this point, you might want to refer to the physical PDF because there is an image on how you would want to do a nested circle exercise to help you achieve collection. The better you do at flexing your horse appropriately and keeping your horse on a perfect circle with the body flexed, the easier it will be for your horse to achieve collection. A horse that's been held in a collected position with a high neck without actually developing the proper muscling and top line to actually be collected may not be able to do this. Again, this is very advanced. Those horses may need to go back to basics. If you're wondering if your horse maybe has a collapsed back and may not have the strength to move in a collected fashion, reach out to me and we can figure it out together. Chapter 10, Riding Stirrupless Made Easy, Advanced Chapter. The problem: you feel like you're going to bounce off your horse without stirrups. That awful sensation of slowly losing your balance while you're bouncing off to one side or the other of your horse is super scary and frustrating if you've ever experienced it. It's like falling off, but in slow motion. And it happens, I think, when you're riding stirrupless or if you've lost a stirrup. We've all been there, or maybe not. Maybe it's just me who's been there. But if you've also been there, then this chapter applies to you. I've had this problem with a lot of horses, but specifically one horse. His name was Dash. He was very, very, very bouncy, very reactive. He would spook, get distracted, move quickly all over the place. We talked about him when we were talking about hot horses. It felt impossible to even think about riding him without stirrups, and I couldn't even bring myself to think about riding him bareback. If you remember in chapter 6, we talked about how to sit the sitting trot. You'll want to apply what we learned from there when you're riding stirrupless to when we were talking about riding bareback to riding stirrupless. As a reminder, we're really going to try and use our core and we're going to try to set the pace. Just like with riding bareback and riding a sitting trot, this is also going to be making riding stirrupless that much easier. The common mistake: grab the horse with your legs. When I was trying to force myself to ride stirrupless with Dash, even though I was terrified, the mistake I would always make would be to grab him with my legs and squeeze with my knees, squeeze with my legs in an effort to keep myself on while I felt like I was bouncing all over the place. Somehow, that always seemed to make the situation worse, and then I would instinctively start leaning forwards, grab onto a bunch of mane. It was not graceful, it did not help with my balance, it did not look pretty. So, let's learn from my mistakes. Let's avoid clutching onto the horse with our legs whenever possible. But then what do we do if we're riding a horse like that, or if we're just not that great with our stability, like I was and had our legs flapping around all over the place? What do we do then to make ourselves feel more stable in the saddle? The two hacks you need to know. Hack number one, increase your hip angle. This is by far the most helpful, but also the least intuitive trick. When we feel like we're about to fall off, the first reaction we have is to grip with our legs and go into the fetal position. We're automatically going to bring our knees up. We're going to point our toes. We're going to clench with our knees. We're going to bring our shoulders forward. And it's just what we're going to do to try and protect our internal organs. It's a human nature thing. It just happens. What you want to do, though, is the exact opposite of this. You want to drop your heels as far as possible. You want to think about keeping your toes up as opposed to down. You want to keep your toes forwards so that you have contact with the inside of your legs with the saddle, but you do not want to grip. And as the name of the hack, the most important part of this is to increase your hip angle. And what that means is that you want to increase the angle that's formed by your torso and your thigh. So that's going to happen from a combination of dropping your heels down, dropping your knees down, and putting your shoulders back. It will feel like you're lengthening your legs and dropping your weight lower and sinking deeper into the saddle. This also put your thighs in a position where they're able to have contact with the saddle, but they're also relaxed and they can help you to balance as opposed to being raised up and tense. The tenser your muscles are, the more difficult it will be for you to actually feel stable in the saddle. I know it's counterintuitive, but I promise you that it works. Hack number two, it's all about the core. We already talked about this a lot when we were talking about sitting the sitting trot in chapter 6. I want you to do exactly the same three things when you're trotting without stirrups. As a reminder, they are: number one, pull in your belly button and squeeze it towards your spine. Number two, activate your core. Number three, perform a slight posterior pelvic tilt, which means that you're slightly tucking your bum in while you're pulling the front of your pubic bone towards the sky. The key is to do all of these three actions simultaneously in time to your horse's trot so that you move your bum with the horse so it ends up being squeeze, 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 squeeze with your core while your horse goes trot, 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 trot. Last but not least, a really, really good trick to help you transition to this if it's a little nerve-wracking is to try and post a stirrupless trot. I guarantee that you and your legs will be so tired that you're not going to have time to be nervous at all about falling or losing your balance. Quick bonus, keeping your leg position stable without stirrups. As I've mentioned previously, one of the things I really struggled with as a beginner was keeping my heels down and my lower leg stable and from flapping around like crazy. If this is something that you struggle with, just know that there are things you can do in order to fix it. It literally took me years to figure out all of the things I needed in order to fix my ankle mobility and develop the stability of my lower legs and ankles to feel stable in the saddle, especially during things like sitting trot, cantering, and especially jumping. One of the things that helps in the sitting trot is, and also in the stirrupless trot, is to flex your feet so that your toes are pointed up and forwards without bringing your knees up. You want to let your legs hang around your horse while also keeping your toes up and your heels down. And again, the way to do this is to actually feel like, instead of pushing your weight down into your heels, feel like you're pointing your toes up to the ceiling. As I mentioned in previous chapters, keeping your toes forward instead of more out will create some internal rotation in your hips, which will naturally glue your knees to the sides of the saddle and thus increase your stability. Remember, we don't want to grip with our knees. We just want to allow there to be a connection there. Chapter 11. Stop a bolting horse. Bonus chapter. The problem, your horse bolted and you couldn't stop. Unfortunately, sometimes horses bolt. It's just the way it is when you ride horses. If you've ever been on a horse that's gone from 0 to 100 in 0 seconds flat, it can be a little unnerving to say the least. Sometimes horses spook by suddenly jumping, rearing, or sidestepping. Other times they spook and just bolt at a dead gallop. When a horse bolts like that, it's basically like a human having a panic attack. They're in fight or flight mode, and they're pretty much desensitized to anything else. Remember back to chapter 4 when we talked about emotional control, and I told you that story about Dash? That's a great way to bring up the spooking / bolting threshold in your horse. Prevention is the best way to deal with bolting horses, but you can't prevent everything, and we also need an emergency plan just in case, i.e., we're going back to that emergency brake that I talked about earlier. The common mistake, going into the fetal position. By now, you know what I'm talking about when I talk about the fetal position. No one is at their best when they're on a horse that has just taken off on them. I know I probably didn't look the most graceful on any of the various horses that have taken off on me. It's really common to lean forwards, pull those knees up, squeeze your leg together, and yank hard on the reins. Remember in chapter 4 how we talked about really trying to fight those instincts when we get nervous? So obviously we're going to try our very best not to do those things. Of course, easier said than done. So what you want to do is you really want to try and lengthen those legs, lean back in the saddle, sit as deep as you can. And then you want to calmly implement the emergency brake. Again, easy for me to say, a lot harder to do. So what's really important is to practice the emergency brake when your horse is going slower, so that if it ever happens where your horse or you're on a horse that bolts, you can feel more confident in using it. The hack you need to know, the emergency brake, as in chapter 4. Since in chapter 4 we were talking about fast horses, I mentioned several times of the fact that I don't want this method to be overused. When you use an emergency brake in the setting of a fast horse, you can end up finding yourself using it over and over and over again. That's when it becomes a band-aid covering the underlying issue of a horse that is just way too quick. There's a greater chance of an accident happening because you're continuously throwing you and your horse out of balance. The emergency brake should really be used in an emergency. So if it's happening over and over again, there's a deeper problem involved. Anyways, I just wanted to mention that because I find that sometimes we use the emergency brake instead of teaching horses how to stop properly. In the case of school horses, they really shouldn't be like that at all. So it's probably not something that you're going to have to worry about, but I really want to mention it just in case. So when your horse gets spooked and bolts, that's generally an emergency. Most of the time, horses, and especially well-trained school horses, do not do this very often. So as in chapter 4, we're going to employ the emergency brake and do the following. Sit as deep as possible in the saddle, get your weight into your heels, lean back, preparing for a sudden stop, quickly slide one hand halfway down the rein, and slowly pull back to the hip. Slowly we're working to flexing our horse's head to about 45 to 60 degrees. This is going to make your horse circle, and then you're going to circle your horse until they halt and immediately dismount. Again, when you're at a gallop, if you jerk quickly back on one rein, you don't want to do this because it can really throw your horse out of balance too quickly. I do mention this multiple times because I really want you not to panic if you ever get in that situation, but more than likely you're going to be able to feel that if you do it too fast, your horse is going to lose balance. So you just want to make sure that you don't overreact and yank back on the rein. You want to slowly and controlled pull back on the rein, and especially then a bit of take and soften as you're pulling back can really help. Another way to start the slowing down process, if your horse is really at a dead gallop and really not listening to just pulling one rein, you can do a seesaw kind of effect and pull the alternate reins really quickly in succession. So it would go something like pull left, pull right, pull left, pull right, pull left, pull right, except even faster. So it's left, right, left, right, left, right, super quickly. And this might help your horse just balance out a little bit and remind them that you're actually on their backs. Because again, this is a horse basically having a human version of a panic attack. A horse can't keep going forwards as quickly as soon as their heads start turning to one side. So the goal is to get your horse with a bend in their body as soon as possible. The faster you do this, the faster your horse will start to slow down. So the goal is to get your horse with a bend in their body as fast as possible in still a safe way. To get used to using the emergency brake, it's important to use this method even when there's no emergency. So just go with your horse at the fastest gait that you're comfortable with, practice it, and practice it with a quick dismount at the end. If you want to work your way up, try and practice at a walk, then a trot, and if you're comfortable, then a canter. Incorporate practice every once in a while just to make sure that you're feeling comfortable if it ever happens that your horse bolts on you. Your body will get used to the feeling of doing the motion, and you won't be as caught off guard, and you'll be more prepared if your horse bolts. Quick bonus. How to know whether your horse will bolt. I know after all this talking about being prepared for your horse bolting, you're probably starting to think to yourself, oh God, what if my horse bolts? I wasn't even thinking about this earlier, and now I'm thinking about this, and now I'm nervous about this. And if that's the case, I'm really sorry. I obviously did not want to get that into your head. So let's just talk about quickly about how to see the warning signs if your horse is going to bolt. I remember after Dash bolted on me that I was telling you that story earlier in this book, and I just couldn't stop him. At the time, I did not know about the emergency brake, and so he just kept going faster and faster and eventually started bucking and bucked me off. I really wish I had known the emergency brake, because I think that I could have gotten off safely if I had known it at the time. After that happened, I was terrified for a while to get on him again, and getting on any horse in general. I thought for sure he would just take off on me again. First, I think it's important to realistically think about the horse that you're riding and whether they've ever done anything remotely like that, and if they have, whether it's a problem that has happened over and over again. Most horses that you're going to be riding are going to be very well trained, are going to be, if anything, too slow, and they're going to be very well emotionally regulated. So if you think about that and think about the chances of them taking off on you, it's very, very, very low. I find that sometimes our fear and lack of confidence makes us have a bit of a skewed perception of the horse that we're riding. If you find that that is the case for you, I would recommend going through the free fear training that my friend Tash does. I've mentioned her previously. We're actually pretty good friends, and she has done me a huge favor and put together a 100% free training as a favor to me specifically to share with you guys. So keep an eye out on your inbox, because if you're interested, I can send you that fear training. You can always also contact me if you have any difficulties. If you really want access to it, I can send it directly to you. Chapter 12, Smooth Out Trot to Canter Transitions. Bonus chapter. The problem: your canter transition is not quick or smooth. Learning to transition smoothly to the canter can help you feel much more put together and balanced as a rider. Learning how to ride the canter is usually easier than riding the trot on most horses, because it's actually much less bouncy and smoother. The place where I find riders get stuck is up transitioning into the canter, or at least this is where I used to get stuck a lot. Actually, riding the canter is pretty easy, and also horses that tend to be a little bit difficult to get into the canter can sometimes trigger a bit of fear in riders. So you'll ask for the canter, and instead your horse will give you a super, super fast trot that's really hard to ride, and you end up super unorganized, your stirrups are all over the place, you might end up losing a stirrup, your legs are bouncing around the place, you start to lean forwards, you're clenching with your legs, and you're just feeling super disorganized. What you really want to know is, how do you get that ultra smooth transition so that you can keep your cool, get your horse to canter from their hindquarters, keep them from falling forwards into a canter after trotting super, super fast around the whole arena. The common mistake: not wanting to use the crop. I don't think I've mentioned Candy to you guys yet. Candy was another school horse that I rode. She was super adorable. She was a tiny pony that I rode for a while. And she was also a pro at giving a very, 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 very fast trot instead of a canter. At the time, I was Annie Crop, because I just I just thought it was mean, to be honest. I never wanted to feel like I was hurting horses. I've always loved horses. I hated the idea of having to use a crop. So whenever my coach would be like, do you want a crop with candy? You might want a crop with candy. I would always be like, no, it's fine. I don't want one. Of course, now I know that that's not true at all, and crops are a tool, and they're not actually hurting the horse if used properly. So back to candy. Her trot would get faster and faster and faster on me as I would try and ask for the canter. I would try my hardest to stay balanced, continuing to give the aids, keep squeezing, keep sitting her crazy trot. Sometimes I got the canter, but it was never a nice transition. And by the time I was cantering, I was all over the place. I was so disorganized. And sometimes I would lose one or both stirrups. So what did Candy learn? Candy learned that if she trots super, super fast with me on her, I'll usually just give up and she doesn't even have to canter. So how do we make sure we keep our composure in the trot so that when we ask for the canter, we can do it in a calm, collected, clear way, no matter how fast the horse is trotting? The hack you need to know. Post-sit, 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 canter. Traditionally, when we're learning how to ride, we always sit trot into the canter. But you actually don't need to do this. You can post right up to the point that you canter. I found this to be so helpful and beneficial for two reasons. Number one, you don't lose your balance and get all disorganized trying to sit a super, super fast trot and squeeze your core a million times a minute. Number two, you learn to time your cues more precisely so that your horse picks up the canter right as you're asking for it. So how do we do this? First, you'll pick up the trot and speed it up. Trot as fast as you can, continuously trying to speed up the trot by pumping your seat. So you're actually asking for a super fast trot. And it's no problem for you to do this because you're posting. As you approach a corner, you'll start moving your aids into position. Specifically, you'll bring your outside leg back behind the girth. And you'll apply pressure with both legs. At this stage, you'll notice cues from your horse that they're ready. Most horses will flick their tail or their ears. They might even break into a canter before you actually ask with pressure from both legs. You really want to make sure that you're going to the corner fast so that your horse is already thinking about potentially cantering. As you turn the corner, you will do the following. Sit, post, sit, post, sit, and squeeze with both legs right into a canter stride. If you don't get the canter immediately, I would recommend backing up your command right away with a crop so that your horse knows that even though this might be different than when usually they're asked for a canter, the horse still has to canter. If you do this the very first time you ask for a canter in a lesson, you'll notice that the next time you ask for a canter in this way, the horse will be much more likely to respond the second you sit and squeeze. Once you get the canter a few times, your horse will have a better feel for cantering with you, and then you'll be able to do it even from a sitting trot much more easily. Last, but certainly not least, don't forget to set that pace with your seat as soon as you're expecting to sit, post, sit, post, sit, and canter forwards. Remember from chapter 6? We're not matching our movements to the horse. We are setting the pace with our seat, and our horse is matching up to us. Chapter 13, Master Jumps with Minimal Falling Risk, bonus chapter. The problem, fear of falling. When you're first learning to jump or learning to re-jump after a long break, or if you've had a bad fall while jumping, jumps can be nerve-wracking. I know no one talks about it or wants to admit it, but I know I went through a period where I was terrified of jumping after my bad fall with Dash. I learned to jump when I was really young on my pony Satchmo, so I really didn't understand that there was anything to be afraid of at that time. I also had a really great bond with that pony. It was much later when I was trying to get Dash used to jumping that I developed this fear. Dash caught the tip of his front hoof on top of the Cavaletti, I think you might remember this from a previous chapter, and I was just walking him over it to get used to that Cavaletti. He spooked so badly that he completely bucked me off. As you can imagine, pushing myself after that to keep trying to get him used to jumps was a daunting task. We've all fallen off, and falling off into a jump, after a jump, or while jumping in general, is the worst in my opinion. We've also all seen the memes of riders falling straight into a stone wall jumps, doing flips right off their horses. Am I right? It's definitely the worst way to fall off. No wonder non-horse people call us all crazy. So the following is a hack I use to help me get over my fear of falling while jumping. The common mistake, tensing up before the jump. The most common mistake when coming up to a jump that you're scared of jumping is to tense up. Obviously, this is easier said than done. I get that 100%. I would tell myself just to relax when bringing Dash up to a jump after our fall, but I would instinctively curl up a little bit, tense, hold a little tighter on the reins, etc. When we feel threatened, we unconsciously go into more of the fetal position with our legs tightening, our shoulders curling inwards, and our knees coming up. Instead, we actually want our shoulders up, our lower back slightly arched, as we two-point over the jump with our heels down and our arms and hands relaxed. So how do you avoid tensing and get into that ideal body position? The hack you need to know. Constantly stay in two-point. So a lot of the times when we're learning how to jump, we're expected to two-point right over the jump. We're expected to sit in our trot or post in our trot and sit in our canter up to the point of the jump and then go into the two-point over the jump and then go back to sitting. What I actually want you to do is just stay in two-point. You want to make sure that you can two-point well enough to actually ride a figure eight around the arena or a four clover pattern with no problems. This means you need to be able to balance in your two-point at a trot or at a canter, use your inner lower legs to squeeze if needed, use your reins to steer, because your seat and single leg aids are mostly out of commission. Once you're able to trot around normally in a two-point, you're going to put pulls into your pattern. Just start with one pull and then work your way up to two. Remember to look straight ahead and don't change absolutely anything about your position when you're going over the jumps. Going over the poles. Pretend you're just riding your pattern. It's your horse's job to do the rest. Once you've done two poles, change the second pole into a very low X jump and repeat at a trot. Again, remember to look straight ahead. Don't change anything about what you're doing. Just stay in your two point. Pretend you're just riding your pattern. It's your horse's job to do the rest. Eventually, you're going to graduate to bigger jumps. You can add more jumps in, you can do a more complex pattern, you can do it at a canter. The perk of coming into a jump and going out of a jump all at the two-point rather than sitting before and then sitting after is that it is almost impossible for you to fall unless your horse does something completely crazy. If your horse refuses the jump, if your horse sidesteps, if your horse jumps higher than expected, or if he trips, it doesn't matter because your weight is so far into your heels and you're already in a suspended mode and able to shock absorb that you're most likely going to be able to stay on. A lot of the reasons why riders fall off is because when they're going into their two-point from a seated position, they end up with their weight too far forwards compared to where the horse ends up being. If your horse suddenly refuses and you're just starting to shift your weight forwards into a two-point, you're much more likely to flip over the front of your horse. Bonus, when you're in two-point, you can grab a fistful of mane the whole time if you need to. This means you're not tempted to pull back on the reins, use the reins for support, and you're going to feel much more comfortable going over any jump if you're able to just have that fistful of mane the whole time. Although this particular bonus won't make you look like a pro show jumper by any means, this is the first step into looking like a pro in the saddle because you're going to build up your confidence to get good at jumping. What about the rest of your body? What if you're still hunching forward and in the fetal position while you're holding that two-point the whole time? So let's talk about how we're going to get over this in the next chapter. Quick bonus, prevent tensing up by remembering to breathe. In chapter 3, I talked about how to prevent tensing up. A great way to do this is to consciously remind yourself to breathe deeply. You might not immediately realize it, but this actually does a lot to help us relax while we're riding. A lot of people, including myself, will actually hold their breaths if they're doing something challenging or scary on a horse. This actually increases the chance of you tensing up and a bad outcome. When you're approaching the jump and you're looking at the jump from a bit of a distance away, just remind yourself to take a few deep breaths and this will fight the urge to tense up and hold your breath. Cantering and jumping are common triggers for riding fears. So this is again where Tash's program that I mentioned a few times already could really come in handy for you. Email me if you're interested in learning more about it, or just keep an eye on your inbox because I'll send it to those of you who are interested in a bit. Chapter 14, Stop Falling Forwards After High Jumps. Bonus chapter. The problem, falling forwards after a high jump. This is definitely the most advanced chapter so far, because I find that it only starts to become an issue when you're starting to jump pretty high. Riders tend to anticipate a big jump, and they lean more forwards with their shoulders come closer to the horse's neck, and then when the horse lands, the horse's lower legs can kick back, their shoulders come forwards, and sometimes this happens too much and they flip right over their horse's neck. Also, if your horse stumbles or anything, does anything that you don't expect during the landing, it becomes even more likely that you're going to fall. It is actually pretty avoidable to make sure this doesn't happen, however. The common mistake, dropping your shoulders too far in 2-point. You probably already caught it from what I was saying earlier, but the problem is dropping your shoulders forwards too much, and especially hunching them or curling them inwards in anticipation of a high jump. Remember what we talked about when we talked about the fetal position and the fear response? It's the same mistake, except that we're not motivated by trying to do a more aggressive, we're motivated by trying to do a more aggressive 2-point in preparation for a high jump. This hack also helps if you tend to curl your shoulders down and forwards if you're tensing up in anticipation of any jump. So how do you make sure that you're not coming too far forwards and that your shoulders are not hunching down? The hack you need to know. Think shoulders up and back. Thinking up and back is not intuitive in 2-point. In fact, you'll even see people tell you to lean forwards or put your shoulders forwards as a cue for going into 2-point. This doesn't usually make much of a difference if you're jumping small fences, but when the height starts to increase, I find that you just can't balance the landing if your shoulders and weight is too far forwards. In your 2-point, you want to think of the following cues instead. Number one, heels down and weight in your heels. Think weight down rather than forwards or backwards. Number two, shock absorb any movement with ankles, knees, and hips. Number three, back arched, concave, and bum out. Number four, shoulders up and rolled back with chest up. Your 2 points of contact are the insides of your lower legs right above your inner ankle joint. This is exactly why it's called a 2-point. This is what's going to keep you connected to the horse. So you want to make sure your weight is down in your heels so that you feel as solid as possible in that connection. If you have your chest up during the whole jump, you won't need to lean backwards as drastically during the landing, and you're going to feel much more balanced. When you're landing a bit harder or from a higher arc, it's much more difficult to correct for the momentum if your shoulders are already leaning too far forwards. This causes your lower legs to kick back, the weight will no longer be in your heels, and the result is that your whole body will come forwards, which in turn increases the chances of falling off. So remember, always think shoulders up and back, with your chest up rather than shoulders forwards or lean forwards. Next steps. All right, guys, we are done going through this ebook. I know it was a lot of information and it might be overwhelming. I suggest that you keep this audio recording available and you go through it multiple times, because I think that the more times you go through it, the more things that you'll pick up that maybe you didn't notice the first time around. I am so happy that you've made it all the way to the end. Again, as I've mentioned already a few times, don't hesitate at all to reach out to me. My email is martina@equestrianbootsandbridles.com. Please reach out. You can let me know what your thoughts are about this ebook. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, anything at all, I'm super, super, super happy to hear from you guys about anything. The following are the three biggest hurdles that I've noticed face beginner riders as they try and progress to their next level of riding. These are the same hurdles that I struggled with. I struggled with each and every one of them, and I had to overcome them one by one. So I'm just going to talk about them now because I think they're really important next steps as you try and progress to your next level of riding. Number one, stabilizing the lower leg and keeping your heels down. We've talked about this a ton already. So you know that I struggled with this a lot as a beginner. My legs would flap around. I could not keep my heels down. I did not have the flexibility or the mobility in my ankles to actually keep my heels down, no matter how hard I tried. The problem is that this is the foundation to improving your seat and balance in the saddle. Before I achieved this, my seat was all over the place. I was constantly bouncing around. I constantly felt like I was about to fall off if a horse was too bouncy or went too fast or did something I didn't expect. Keep an eye on your inbox because I have some free stuff coming your way if you struggle with this too. So you're going to get an email, and in that email, you're going to get to choose if this is something that you struggle with. And if it is, I will send you free stuff to help you. Because I struggled with this so much, and I really, really don't want other people to struggle with it for as long as I did. Because once I figured out how to get my heels down and to keep my lower leg stable, it really just changed my riding completely and made it so much easier and better. And if you ever get to the point where you want to start jumping courses, jumping high, you really, like, it's non-negotiable. You need that lower leg stability. You need the ability to keep those heels down. Next step number two, overcoming fear and improving confidence. As you guys already know, I talked about how I had to overcome my fear on several different occasions. The one time in my riding that I really, really got stuck was when I got my horse Rudy. So when I got Rudy, he was only 4, as some of you guys may already know if you follow me on social media, and I was starting to train him. I was training him how to do some basic dressage stuff. I was training him how to jump. And he was so green. He'd only been ridden for maybe like a month or two when I got him. So that was something that was a huge challenge for me because I had never done any kind of training at that level before. And he was really, really energetic and fresh and feisty when I got him. He was really pushy with me when I got him. And I had to overcome so many obstacles with him when I first started training him. And in the beginning, there was so much fear around all of that. And I couldn't even think about starting to jump with him. Like, it was something that seemed so impossible to get to. So that was the time in my riding career where I had a fear where I could not overcome myself. So that's when I met my friend Tash. She's from Australia. I think I already talked to you guys about her. Her full name is Natasha Altov. She works with students to help them overcome their riding fears. She is a very high level dressage rider. And I think I already mentioned to you guys that she, broke a bone in her back when riding her stallion. And it took her a long time and a lot of mental effort to be able to get over that fear. And now she shares her strategy with all of her students. And I went through her program, and the only reason why I'm now jumping consistently with Rudy and able to do courses with him and combinations and all sorts of cool stuff. And I achieved that in literally less than 6 months, and I could not have done that without her program. There's absolutely no way. So if you want more information about this, feel free to email me. Otherwise, keep an eye on your inbox because I will give you the option if you want to go to one of her free trainings. She offered me a free training exclusively for you guys because she is awesome. So if you want access to that, just let me know. All right, next step number three. Improving your understanding of horses and learning how to speak horse. So this is something that not a lot of beginner riders think about. And I certainly, when I was first starting to learn how to ride, did not even think about this. This did not even cross my mind. And I certainly did not think it had anything to do with how well I could ride. I did see people lunging, and of course I watched shows where horsemanship was a thing. And it was always something that I really wanted to be able to do. I really wanted to be able to understand horses. I really wanted to be able to help fix horse issues. But it seemed so far away and so foreign and so difficult. And it really seemed like something that only somebody who grew up around horses their whole lives and like lived on a ranch would be able to do. So it never really occurred to me until a lot later that it is actually something that I could do. And I never realized how much my lack of horsemanship was holding me back actually in my riding until I started to read books about horse behavior and learned how to do basics of groundwork and lunging. So if you are at all interested in being able to know what your horse is going to do before they do it, to improve your ability to handle horses in and out of the saddle, and to understand your horse's emotional state from their body language, I think that you should check out my Ground Up Horsemanship course for beginners. It is everything that I've learned about horsemanship structured in a way that is very, very easy for beginners to digest. It's very methodical, step by step, and it's something that you can actually practically apply to your riding and to everyday issues beginners have with horses. Things like going to catch a horse that will not come to you. Things like leading a horse that then suddenly takes off towards a patch of grass. Things like that that you deal with as a beginner when you're doing lessons every single day, and you usually have to rely on somebody else to fix for you. Those are exactly the things that I talk about. And I have some free stuff that is super useful, coming your way too. If you're interested, just keep an eye on your inbox and I will send it to you if you like. As always, you can always reach out to me and email me if you want more information about any of this. Okay, guys, this is it. We are all done. I've mentioned this already so many times, but I just really want to drill home. If you have any questions, any comments, anything at all, or if you just want to chat and say hi, I love it when you guys reach out to me and email me, and I check my emails all the time. So please email me at martina@equestrianbootsandbridles.com, and even if it's just to say hi. Also, you can find me on TikTok at EquestrianBNB. I am always there and sharing daily tips exclusively for beginner riders. So I really hope you enjoyed this ebook. I hope you enjoyed this reading, and I hope that this is really helpful for you and helps you to overcome some of these common beginner mistakes that we all have made, and helps you race through them and really accelerate your riding and helps you get to the next phase of your riding as soon as possible.